Jackson. He's guard from Cary, North Carolina.
So how about that? Huge day. And just kind of to ditto what you guys said, it just feels like it truly is a culture shift. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out this year. I know a lot of people are expecting them to be pretty successful in the Missouri Valley Conference, especially with teams getting worse like Indiana State and everything. So.
And Drake. Drake lost their coach and their best player. It really seems like it's, as much as this pains me to say on a Red Zone show at Illinois State, it kind of seems like it's Bradley and anybody else right now. But that means this is Illinois State's best chance to compete, especially with all these guys they're bringing in. And not to mention with all the guys they brought in, Johnny Kinziger is still here as well. So he kept one of the main focal points from last season. There's a big culture change going on. I'm excited to see what's going to happen this season.
Also with that, they still have so many more of their older guys, too. They have a lot of graduate transfers here coming in, too. So they're bringing in a lot of older guys with a lot of development and a lot of – they've always been in here. They've been in the system. They know what they're doing. And you're bringing in these younger guys that also want to make a name for themselves. So having these older guys still here, teaching them and showing them how to have their way with Peden like that, it's going to be great for them while they're still developing and recruiting.
And this is the biggest thing I think Coach Peden has done successfully, and this was my biggest critique of the Redbirds last year, is just size was just non-existent. Like, Kendall Lewis is kind of our only guy with height, and he was like 6'7". Now we have Cameron Barnes coming in who's 6'9". Isaac Erickson is 6'9", who's supposedly a guard, just a build I've never heard of before. And then Nick Allen, 6'11". Chase Walker's tall, and he cut off a lot of weight this offseason. Just, there's a lot of size finally here at Illinois State for men's basketball, so just the team is completely revamped.
I just want to see a dunk. I just want to see one dunk happen.
From who? Anyone?
Anybody. That could be a 6'2 guard. It could be a 7-footer we have on the team. I just want to see one dunk during a game.
You just
want
to see someone go famous.
Exactly.
You want a Sports Center top 10 moment.
I just
want
to see something super exciting during a game like that.
Yeah, and I want it to be a game I'm calling so I can go viral all over the internet so I can just flex it.
Like my Kinziger call. Yeah. Well, I one more player I want to mention that we haven't really mentioned yet, and he was like a huge talk of the preseason last year, and it ended up being Kinziger, who was really the talk, was Ty Pence. And it'll be very fun to see his development as well. And he's only a sophomore, so assuming he sticks around the program with Johnny Kinziger, these recruits that they're getting in, and even on top of that, just some of the players that are sticking around, just exciting times for Illinois State Redbird basketball. And I really can't wait to see where they go from here. What happens after that. So now let's get into Illinois State football. Big weekend. We're headed to Iowa. Not just the Redbirds, not just the Redbird football team and maybe the Redbird faithful as well, but the three of us are headed to Iowa. We will have the game live at 10:50 a.m. from Iowa, so we're super excited for that. It is FCS number 19 Redbirds set to open the season at number 25 Iowa. We talked a little bit about it last week, but just initial thoughts going into the game, guys, before, because it will really be the last time we talk about them before we put on the headsets on Saturday.
Yeah, for me, I feel like a big thing, you're facing a Big Ten opponent. You obviously know they're going to come up with more size, more strength. So one thing you want to do is control the clock and control the amount of time that they have the ball. Iowa's obviously a defensive team. They're a top-ranked team in the Big Ten last year. ISU on the other side, they were third in the MVC in sacks and then first in sacks allowed. So that's not going to be good in the trenches for them. So what they want to do is have more RPOs, quicker routes, just not let their quarterback just sit and hold the ball, because when he does that, that's when Iowa's going to get to him, and it's going to be a really bad day for them if that keeps on happening.
You hear Coach Julian Voss over here calling RPOs. I'm thinking, oh, my God, yeah, get him out there. But, yeah, it's just – I'm confident for ISU. I'm not saying we're going to get a win or anything too crazy like that. It's just they're returning so many of these guys while Iowa's in a mess right now. Their head coach isn't even going to be involved. There's a lot going on. This just seems like a good opportunity for Illinois to cause some, like, a surprise. And I think from my understanding, I think Rittenhouse is confirmed starter. Can we confirm that?
He was named the captain, so I would assume so. Yeah.
But yeah, no, so getting a guy that can move like that as well is just so crucial for Illinois State. There's a chance. I mean, they return the running backs and receivers. Everybody's here. If there's ever a time to cause a surprise, how is it not now?
Looking back at the Big Ten for Illinois State, Illinois State was 0-8 before they took a win against Big Ten foe Northwestern in 2016. So, you know, we could be in for some history in terms of Illinois State football here on Saturday. But once again, against a really, really good Iowa team, for the most part, I know a lot of people don't give them their credit because the offense is not really there. But once again, that is a phenomenal defense for a Redbird team that averaged 35 points a game last season.
But yeah, they were super, like, they were super young last year. Like, I look at that team, they pretty much lost all their starters, so they had all the young guys. Now everyone's back, so you get a year of experience. Just, you have a tight core, and, like, you really just can't train experience. So the fact that you have that now is just so crucial for a team like the Redbirds.
And they're also so explosive compared to how they were a couple of years ago, because you got guys like Sopkowicz that are still here, Winkers, right, still here, and all those guys can make plays on the field. If you give them the opportunity, they're going to make a play for you. Mm-hmm. So if they just give their athletes the ball and just give them space and let them go, then you never know what's going to happen with the game.
And another big thing, too, that I'm reading up on here right now is Illinois State's defense was ranked top 25 in the FCS last year. So, I mean, in terms of recruits and players, it might seem like a difference on the field, but really once you get there, it's kind of similar to how March Madness is. Once you're kind of fair on the field, it really doesn't make a difference, because all that matters is you're trying to get the win and just hold them down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but this is a dumb worry because I'm not even a player or anything, but like, this is the biggest stadium I think we're ever going to be at for a game we're going to call. And like, Ben shows a photo of where we're going to be commentating at. It's beautiful. It's like, I'm already getting the jitters just thinking about that. Now imagine being a player. Like, you go from normal Illinois to an arena as big as Iowa, which I believe is holding 68,000 people. That's just a different atmosphere. And so how does a team like Illinois State prepare for something like that?
It's just, you got to understand the culture change and just wanting to be there and just trying to make a name for yourself, for me, because all those guys out there.
I'm about to make a name for myself.
Some of those guys are going to have NFL aspirations and want to make to the league at some point. This is the type of game where they're going to have a name for themselves and make that kind of their coming out point, where they're going to be like, all right, I'm in this. I'm trying to make it the NFL, and I have a whole career ahead of me. Mm-hmm. If they don't do that this game, then they may not have the chance again to do that. So for me, I feel like this is the type of game where they're going to try to make a name for themselves. Players just like Sopkowicz, other older guys. So it kind of depends on if those guys just really do what they really need to do.
Yeah, so I have a question for the both of you guys.
Yeah.
You're Coach Spock. How do you game plan for a game like this? Like, are you trying to be cautious? Are you trying to be over-aggressive? Like, what's the strategy heading to a game as massive as Iowa?
You got to have special plays during this type of game. Like, you got to have some trick plays. You got to have big explosive plays. Like, it's the type of thing where if you don't have a special teams touchdown or a big special teams return or something like that, you're not going to win the game. Because they're not going to drive down the field on Iowa multiple times. Like, that's just not going to happen against such a great defense. They got to try to have big explosive plays. That's what I'm saying. Like, get it to their athletes. If they're really trying to have the clock and slow down on offense, that's why I go to the RPOs and the options, because that makes the defense so tired. And throughout the game, if you're doing that more and more and more, they're just not going to be ready for the end of the game where you could throw out a trick play or something like that. So if they just control that time and just control the speed of the game, then they'll be fine.
Do you think Coach Ferentz for Iowa being suspended makes a difference at all in the game?
I mean, I would normally say no if it's like in the middle of the season, but game one, like, you really can't prepare for an actual game during the offseason. I know that people say you can. You can't. Like, you just can't match the actual intensity. So not having your main guy there, I think, is a big impact. But, I mean, it is Iowa, so, like, they can probably figure it out, but, like, I think it is big.
As a player, I feel like it's more of a big thing than versus the other coaches on the roster, because you got to look at the coach as being like a guy they're going to look to when a game gets rough, because yes, they have captains and everything, but in the locker room at halftime, the guy that's bringing everybody else together is the head coach. And without that guy, then they don't have anybody else except for somebody that may step up. So it's more so of having a figure around versus like having a guy actually call plays to me.
Yeah, and I want to bounce off that, because like, Iowa is not a team that tends to score a lot of points. So let's say it's close at halftime. They go in the back and like, it's kind of tense. They don't really know what to do. Who's talking them out of that? Like, you don't really get that big halftime speech, which is maybe the most underrated aspect of sports. Like, you see teams that are struggling so hard in the first half and just look like a completely different team the second half. Iowa won't have that. So if Illinois State keeps this game close, a lot of chaos can break out.
Nonetheless, huge, huge weekend. Everyone is super excited for Illinois State football this year. I mean, they're looking good. Everything's looking up, but they have a big test, obviously, to start the season against Iowa. Once again, we will be there. 10:50 a.m. Our broadcast starts from Iowa City. Illinois State Redbirds versus the Iowa Hawkeyes. We're super excited to bring that one to you. But when we come back on the Red Zone, Hannah Reichensberger of Illinois State Volleyball will be joining the show. We'll be back on the Red Zone. WZMD, the pulse of Redbird Nation, back here on the Red Zone with junior middle blocker of the Illinois State volleyball team, Hannah Reichensberger. Hannah, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm stoked to be here.
How was your offseason? I think that's the first question you could ask.
It was good. A lot of recovery, a lot of rehab from my ACL injury in the fall. It was a lot of hard work.
I spent a lot of time with my athletic trainer, Courtney. We got really close. But over the summer, I was getting back into it, and this past weekend, stepped on the court against another team for the first time since November.
Awesome.
It was the best feeling in the entire world.
So you're completely ready to go for this weekend, 100%.
So, I mean, we took a little step back from the weekend just because I really just jumped right into it.
Okay.
So we're easing into it a little more than we did, but I will definitely be back soon, maybe for a couple games this weekend, but within the next couple weeks for sure.
Awesome. That's great to hear. So something we do with a lot of our guests when they first come on for our audience is kind of like introduce themselves. How have you gotten to this point? So like kind of map out your volleyball career to where you've gotten to here now.
All right. So I'm originally from a very, very small town in Minnesota, way up north, like 30 miles south of the Canadian border.
Okay.
I played club in Duluth, which is a bigger city on Lake Superior, 2 hours away from where I lived. So I was making that trek 3 times a week to play club and travel for tournaments. And that's really how I got recognized in a recruiting profile because my recruiting class was during COVID. So everything was online. And that's where Illinois State found me. And from the very first phone call I had with them, I just loved everything about it. The core values they had, the size of the campus, academics, just everything was what I wanted.
And you think it's worked out perfectly for
absolutely, you? Absolutely. Yeah. It's been so fun being here. Freshman year, you know, it's just an adjustment into college, especially coming from a smaller town. College is a fast game,
yeah.
But once I got into, like, after that first year, I think last year I really stepped it up, and I'm just looking to keep growing from here.
That's awesome.
And so I talked to Coach Matters earlier this week. We had a fun conversation. One of the questions I asked her is, what keeps her motivated, like, when the season gets tough? And she says, oh, I just love the energy my players get. And she specifically said your name, like, how you went through this ACL recovery, and yet you're still, like, a bundle of joy for her to be around. So I'm wondering, like, when you're recovering through such a tough injury like that, like, how do you stay so mentally strong and positive?
I've been thinking about getting back on the court for the past 9 months, and on Saturday when I finally was, it was better than I ever imagined. Like, I just love volleyball. My favorite part about it is being on a team and working with my teammates. So to finally be on a court again with them to work together, it was the best thing in the world. And so that I just was like, always looking at the end goal.
I mean, that's goosebumps right there. Like, I don't know what else can get you more hyped up than that.
Yeah, going off of that, you said you love seeing that your team, you're like, it's like a family to you pretty much too. So
absolutely.
What do you like seeing from these new freshmen coming in and the new transfers? Like, do you have a good relationship with them so far?
Yes, we came in for the summer for training, and I think almost immediately everybody clicked. Like, this team is so cohesive, so gelled. Like, I am so excited for the season, not only for the amazing skill that we have, because these freshmen are insane. These transfers are insane. Like, be ready for Redbird volleyball. But we are just such a cohesive group and, like, get through stuff together.
Yeah, so I saw in the coaches' preseason AP poll that you guys were projected fourth in the Missouri Valley Conference. And last season, it was kind of up and down for Illinois State. We had the 9-loss streak, and then we had a 9-win streak. So what's going to happen this season to keep the wins coming more consistently?
I think that cohesiveness in the group really will help a lot. Just being on the same page and fighting for each other on our exhibition match on Saturday, like, started off, like, we lost the first set, but that was our first time playing against someone else together, and we came back and just, like, dominated the next three. So I think it's just the fight that everybody has for each other and for the program itself.
He's already shared some kind words that Coach Matters has said about you, but can you, like, share more about your relationship with Coach Matters and really how she's been able to influence you as a player?
Yeah, so Allie actually didn't recruit me. I was recruited by the old coaching staff, and so I was nervous to come in to a coach I'd never met before. We had talked on the phone, but as soon as I saw her press conference when she first got here, I was like, this is it. This is the coach that I want. And since our freshman year, like, we went through stuff together freshman year just with injuries, and it just wasn't the season that we had envisioned for ourselves. So I think that me and Ada, another junior who's been here since our freshman year, like, us three together, like, been here. This is our third year together. We're super close, and I can rely on Allie. She can rely on me. Ada included, and it's, yeah, I couldn't ask for a better relationship with her.
No, yeah, that's great. We love Coach Matters. Oh, I love the best.
Coach Matters is the best in the world.
She's always
in my suit jacket twice. It's so hard to keep my composure and not start blushing. You know, gotta be a non-biased journalist, but she makes it tough.
She's the best.
Yeah. All right, yeah, I got a kind of a more like funnish question. So before the games, I like to listen to what people like listen to before music. What's the type of songs you like to listen to?
Okay, I was prepared for this. I had it pulled up on my phone.
That's awesome.
I have to come up. Okay, my number one song is Who's Sexy, I'm Sexy by Big Will and DJ Telly Telt. Okay. That's just been a recent one. Uh-huh. But really, in the locker room, it's a mix of everything. A little bit of rap, a little bit of pop. I personally like Black Eyed Peas.
Okay.
Like, yeah, that kind of jam.
Great group.
Yeah, I can get down with anything.
Anything.
That's up to you.
Okay, so for you, every year going into a new season,
mm-hmm.
what is just the most exciting part for you? I know you've obviously been through a lot this off season, so mm-hmm. that could probably play even more motivation into that. But just in general, what is most exciting about going into a new season every year?
I think as a middle, the connection between me and my setter is really important for an offense. And so especially going into season with a new setter, like building that connection every game is, I'm super excited for that. I just like feeling yourself improve and seeing your teammates improve is so exciting. Like I'm thinking about our conference and I just like, we just keep growing and I don't know what they're doing in the gym, but I don't think they're prepared for us.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like a little bit of smack talk.
That's great.
Fiery on the red zone.
Do you have any past graduates from this last year that kind of have helped you shape into what you became right now? Like for example, like did anybody like kind of help bring you into like this culture and this chemistry that you have right now at the
mm-hmm.
team?
Absolutely. Every senior class that I've been with, I've looked up to as leaders. Katie Weimerskirch and Sarah Kushner from my freshman year, like they were always big dogs when they were here and just incredible volleyball players. And then Nora Yanka, just she stepped up last year and stepped into that leader position really gracefully. And just any of our graduates that I've learned from and watched play and be a leader, I've learned from all of them.
And I kind of want to bounce off that question from Julian, kind of going back to very much day one, but who's your mm-hmm. biggest inspiration into like getting into volleyball?
My mom. She played at the University of Minnesota. She was my coach in high school. She coached a couple years of my club volleyball. And she was there for everything. She loved it. I loved it. And like that was my life.
And then I want to get fiery again. So why should the Redbird faithful come to your guys' game and come watching? Like what's so exciting for this team? What should they look forward to seeing?
I mean, I'm biased, but volleyball is so fun. It's mm-hmm. like the funnest sport to watch, I think. But this year is just, we are pumped. We are big and physical. Our littles are like so scrappy and defensive. No ball's hitting the floor. And if it is, it's because Ruth, the freshman, is blocking it or like hitting it straight yeah. down. It's just, we're good. Mm-hmm. Everybody is so good. And we have so many new faces to showcase. It's going to be exciting.
And so can we expect to see some silverware this season?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I love it.
One more question before we get in like the really fun ones that we have set for you. You were talking about leaders from the past mm-hmm. and it seems like you kind of talked about yourself and Ada Hiley as sort of like a leader of this team with you guys being around for so long. What advice have you taken to give to the underclassmen just kind of help build the culture and continue to try and win and improve games?
I would say that like nobody can do it alone. Like even lead, like I feel comfortable in a leadership position on this team, but not without Ada. Like Ada and I, we're different and we balance each other out and we lead in ways that the other person can't. And like you need a team to play volleyball, like to pass set hit, but like emotionally you need to lean on each other and work with each other. This whole sport is about teamwork. And so whether that's leading or like actually playing the game, like you need each other.
Well, the X's and O's were awesome. We talked about it before.
Now we get real serious
and
here.
You definitely got us hyped up for this season because it seems like you guys are going to be great.
Yes,
but we want to know more about not just yourself, but your team as well. So we prepared a couple questions to get to know you guys. I have one that I want to know. Who's the biggest screenager on your team? So just like someone that is just glued to their phone 24/7, whether it be TikTok, Instagram, you know what I mean?
I mean, I hate to do this to her, but Ali Sala, Ali Sally, as we call her. She knows, like, she just speaks in TikTok and TikTok brain rot. I mean, we love her. It's hilarious, but definitely Allie.
Yeah, and then when it comes to like playing music in the locker room, who do you trust to be on aux and who is like banned from the aux cord?
Megan Haynes, we put on aux. Allie Sally once in a while. Honestly, I don't think anybody would want me on aux. Ada, she's the biggest Swiftie. Love that for her. Don't love it for the team. So she's not on that.
Out of everybody on the team, I love food. I'm just going to mention that right now. Mm-hmm. Who would you trust to make you a meal? And what would it be?
Oh, that's a good one. You know, Olivia Zaputa, she's from Poland. So okay. I kind of want to see what she's got.
Polish dish, that'd be nice.
Yeah, I'd be interested.
And then so during the ACL recovery, you have crutches for a while. Who do you trust the most to carry your bag and who can you not trust with your bags at all?
Ada, she was on the power rack with me in spring. That's what we called it. So she could carry everything that I ever needed. Allie Sally's always leaving stuff everywhere, her water bottle, her phone, anything.
It's because of that phone.
Yeah, it is that phone. It's that phone. So I think she'd lose one of my crutches. I don't trust her with that.
All right, you mentioned Ada loving Taylor Swift, so this question might go hand in hand with it. Okay. Which one of your teammates do you think could pursue a career as a pop star?
That's a good one. I think Megan would say that she would like to, but she doesn't have the balls to do it. I would love to see like Lily Croshaw. She would be fun on stage.
That's awesome.
I'm good.
All right, I got one more. If you could invite three athletes to have dinner with, dead or alive, who would you like to eat?
Wow.
That's a great question.
Hard-hitting journalism here.
I know, and I think I'm going to be like called so basic. Caitlin Clark.
Okay.
That's a great answer.
I love her. This is really good. Tori Dixon, she was a middle at Minnesota and is now on the USA team. So
okay.
I'd thank her for sure. And, any athlete. That's big. You know, probably Kobe Bryant.
Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's a great table.
Yeah, that's a great table.
I think I have one more now. You got me a little inspired to ask one more question.
All right, go.
So, biggest volleyball game in your life. You're going to run duos. Everything is on the line. Who do you want to be your teammate?
Ada Shadowald.
That's awesome.
Perfect.
Point blank period. Yeah, absolutely.
We wish we had more time. This was awesome. We had so much fun. Thank you so much for having me. Do you have anything else you want to say before we wrap up here?
Okay, when Allie asked me if I was available for this, I said only on one condition, if I could sing. And then she said, you have to sing the fight song.
Okay.
So after every game that we win, we go to the crowd and we sing the fight song and we clap along. We've been practicing it every day in practice this week.
Okay,
that's
I'm
how confident we are.
Yeah, we're ready.
We're ready to clap.
I mean, if I can sing the fight song.
Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Ready?
We're ready.
Okay. Go, you Redbirds, on to battle. Fight for ISU. Raise the banner red and white till this emblem will be true. So let us hear the Redbirds on to victory. Every voice proclaim, go State. We got the fight. We got the might. We won this game. ISU, go.
Watch out, Allie, we're coming. That was awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. This weekend, the Redbirds are back at CEFQ Arena. We will be covering Central Michigan tomorrow night at 6:20 and Lindenwood at 6:20. Hannah, thank you so much once again.
Thank you guys so much.
Appreciate it. 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Once again, thank you, Hannah Reichensberger, for joining the show.
That was awesome.
Yeah, great time with Hannah. That was a great first interview to start the year. So make sure to go check out Illinois State Volleyball this weekend. But most of all, listen here on 103.3 WZND. Once again, our game times 6:20 on Friday against Central Michigan and 6:20 on Saturday against Lindenwood. But we're going to stick with college athletics for the time being and talk a little bit about some college football. We're officially back. Last week we gave you a little prelim into it with week zero. Already crazy upset in college football.
That was an awesome hate
Georgia
watch.
Tech against Florida State. So honestly, let's just start there because, I mean, that was the biggest game last week that everyone was so excited about. We were in Dublin. And, you know, Florida State, who was the number 10 team in the country going into it, just kind of just got ran all over by Georgia Tech, who, once again, I posted on Twitter, I want to take some responsibility because I had recently just started a Georgia Tech dynasty in NCAA football. But nonetheless,
so
great game. It was so much fun to feel that college football energy back.
I mean, we just have to talk about what's maybe the craziest graphic of all time is DJ when he had his, like, 10 for 15 and his average, like, throw was, like, negative 1.5 yards for each throw. Dude, you've been in college for, like, 5 years. That's crazy.
I just want to mention Georgia Tech's jerseys are so nice.
They're beautiful.
They're so nice.
It's like Notre Dame a little bit, though. It's like the color scheme. Like, nothing can be the iconic of Notre Dame's uniforms, obviously.
I know Rudy.
Exactly. Yeah. But Georgia Tech does have some beautiful uniforms.
But back to the game. I thought it was so over for Georgia Tech when it's halftime and I see a college kicker nail it from 59 yards.
I know.
Yeah, I thought they lost in that moment, but Georgia Tech, they stayed strong, so good on both sides of the ball. Their ability to just run is ridiculous. Like, they were running all over a top 10 team in college, and then just the game-winning kick. Their coach had such an awesome post-game interview. It's just the vibes were there for Georgia Tech, and I hope this Dublin Ireland tradition happens every year because it's been awesome both years.
It's been 3 years now.
Oh, I thought Notre Dame last year was the first one.
I'm pretty sure Northwestern went 3 years ago.
Really? Wow.
It might have been Nebraska maybe or something like that.
That's why I forgot.
Yes, and then last year was Notre Dame Navy, and now this year it was Florida State Georgia Tech. This was definitely the biggest game of them all out of everything that's happened. So, great game there. Super exciting stuff from week zero on college football. But now we get to the real exciting stuff here this weekend. We're already starting tonight. Fellow FCS foe, North Dakota State, going up against Deion's Bunch and the Colorado Buffaloes. I think everyone's excited for that game tonight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do you think 95% of the world are rooting for North Dakota State tonight?
I just saw a graphic on Twitter where it was like the map of the world and it's who's rooting for Colorado.
Oh, the whole
and
world?
It's just Colorado.
Yeah. Oh, no.
I like Colorado. I'm personally
you got the cap. I thought I saw you wearing it.
A Colorado cap. It's just, I mix and match my hats. I don't mind Colorado. I like Deion a lot.
I got iffy feelings about Colorado. I like Colorado. I liked what they first brought in with that culture. But once Deion was like, he got there and he was like, all right, all you guys are packing your bags and leaving. That's when I was like, he has favorites. Like, he's a very favorite type of coach, but they have so much talent. Like, you can't deny that. I like Deion Sanders as a person. Just like his coaching standpoint, though, I just don't know if I could mess with it.
I don't want to speculate on anything, but like, you see the rumors. It's just, there's so many stories you hear about what's going on in the locker room. Like, people had to attend his son's concert and all that. Like, you hear a lot of drama going on back there. But the big thing he says when he told everybody he had to go, Colorado has 42 new transfers this year. How do you build a team chemistry with 42 new transfers? Mm-hmm.
Well, you build a team chemistry by putting their social media tags on the back of their jerseys. No, not really. But I think this is one of the picks that we look at for this entire weekend. And I mean, there are a couple great games, a couple stinkers as well, but I'm just being honest here. But this is one of those picks where it's like all eyes of the world, first college football day really back. And it's everyone talks about Colorado because the media talks about them, whatever it might be, going up against an FCS powerhouse in North Dakota State. So it's definitely something to keep your eye on just because of the fact that, you know, we might be seeing it this weekend with Illinois State and Iowa. Anything is possible in college football. We saw it last weekend with Georgia Tech and Florida State.
Well, I'm going to be honest. I'm playing the Shedeur Sanders song all night. I don't think Colorado's losing. It's just North Dakota State, they're also having somewhat of their own locker room. I don't want to say issues, but, like, their head coach, Matt Entz, left to USC to be, like, their linebacker coach. And so, like, that's a big loss to have, especially how they ended last year. They had, like, 3 losses out of their last 4 games. They didn't end that strong. So I think tonight's going to be a great night to be a Colorado fan. It's prime time, baby.
I think it's going to be a Colorado W as well. There's just so much talent, like top-end talent on this team that's just so much more versus North Dakota State. I feel like it's different this weekend because Iowa doesn't have super top-end talent. Like, Travis Hunter's going to be a top-10 pick. Shedeur Sanders has a huge chance of being a top-10 pick. And also the Heisman this year. Mm-hmm. So, like, those two guys itself, who's going to stop those guys? But if they do stop those guys, then that's when it gets interesting.
Yeah, I'm also so excited to see how the Travis Hunter experiment is going to go this year because, like, he likes to play corner and wide receiver, which led to some injury problems last year. Like, I'm wondering to see how Deion's going to balance it out. Like, he's just going to have him play every snap like he did last season. How could you not be excited watching Colorado? They're a fun team.
They really are. So that's tonight.
There's Luther Burden plays tonight, by the way, guys. Go Mizzou. Mizzou. I hyped him up last season. Just got to show some love real quick before we move on. The Mizzou dynasty starts tonight.
Yeah, so we got Missouri as the number 11 seed going up against Murray State tonight at 7. Kansas facing Lindenwood, who I feel like at ISU we see Lindenwood every other week. We're seeing them this weekend. Tomorrow night, Oklahoma going against Temple. You know, these are games that you kind of feel like are pretty chalk. What you got?
There is a very interesting game tonight, I feel, though. North Carolina and Minnesota.
Okay.
I kind of feel like North Carolina is going to take this one away. I just want to hear guys' opinions on that.
I love the system they built in North Carolina. They just have, like, they do strong in the transfer window. They got a great coach there as well. I'm a big North Carolina fan, and just Minnesota hasn't been fun since Tanner Morgan left. So I'm rooting for North Carolina tonight.
Yeah, I'm probably going for North Carolina as well. They're a fun team.
And then Jacksonville State and Coastal Carolina also play tonight.
That's definitely a game for sure. Like, it's definitely going to take place.
Coastal's kind of good, though, this year, right? No?
I heard Jacksonville State's supposed to be pretty decent this year. So, like...
All right, guys. I got to be honest. I'm foaming out of the mouth. I'm on the edge of my seat. Can we talk about game of the week?
We're going to talk about it. We're going down the list. I want to go down the list because there are some good games that we could talk about before to, I think, what you're talking about.
Yeah.
11 a.m. this Saturday, number 14 Clemson against the number one team in the country, the Georgia Bulldogs. That is a great way to start off college football season. Yeah,
absolutely. It's just very unfortunate for Clemson that your first game of the season is going to be against this powerhouse known as Georgia. I think Cade's a cool quarterback. I really liked him out of high school. He hasn't really delivered as much as I was hoping he would. But Clemson, they have their way they want to build. They don't want to go through the transfer portal. It just seems like it's Georgia versus everybody else, especially after last season, after they were taken out of the playoffs. I know they just have vengeance, and they just want to go out there and molly-whop everybody. So I would not be surprised if this is like a two-score game.
Yeah, for me, I feel like it's Georgia's like kind of feels like a top dog right now compared to everybody else. They have a lot more returning guys. Carson Beck's going to try to make his name known to be the first overall quarterback taken. So I think it's going to be a very close game, but I see Georgia coming out on top just because of more of the top end talent they have. And like you said, they're coming for vengeance this year. They lost to Bama last year. I personally still think they should have been in.
Same here.
The college football playoff, but this is going to be the year where they're like, all right, let's try to get back in it. Let's show the whole world what we really can do, and this is the first game for them to prove that.
Keep going down the list here. It's funny to see, looking at the top 25 games, Illinois State on there. but nonetheless, 19, Miami against Florida. That one's got potential for something good. Miami is trying to rebound after it's been a rough go for them recently.
Can we talk about Florida real quick? Maybe the hardest schedule of like all time. They have like 9 ranked games, and their last 5 games features like 4 current top 10 ranked teams. Like, I feel so bad for him. Billy Napier, like, he's on the hot seat, and I don't know how he proves himself this year. He's got no chance.
Well, what if they just turn around and just become one of the best teams in the country? You never know.
Then I'll do like a crazy dare. Like, I'm that confident it's not going to happen.
All right, let's do it, Joe. Number 7, Notre Dame. Number 20, Texas A&M, College Station, Texas, Kyle Field. If you guys didn't know, me and Joey both fans of the Golden Domers.
Sadly.
And Julian does not like them, as does most people that I talk to. Just give us your game preview. Yeah. There's a lot going into this game.
This is Notre Dame's biggest game of the year before the playoffs already, because we thought it was going to be Florida State, but we saw what happened with Georgia Tech. This is going to be their toughest game, and it's very conflicting for Notre Dame. Because I feel like Notre Dame is better at every position, but in the trenches. Their offensive line, their star guy, Jagasaw Shaw, is injured. And so now their offensive line has a combined 6 starts, which is awful for a top 10 team. And then you go against a D-line the caliber of Texas A&M. It is so unfortunate that is Texas A&M's best strength, and Notre Dame's biggest weakness is their offensive line. It's going to be catastrophic, but as I said, I think Notre Dame's better in every other position. This is going to be a dogfight. But I can't confidently tell you that Notre Dame walks out of this game with a victory.
See, Notre Dame fans saying that is kind of my whole thinking with this whole game. Like, if you're iffy on this game, I feel like that's how I got to feel about it, too. Like, I feel like Connor Wayman's a dog. I think he's a great quarterback for A&M. Notre Dame itself is such a good, well-rounded team, though, too. Mm. They run the ball so well. Last year, I know they lost their running back, Estime. He was on the Broncos, I think,
he's
right
now. He's on the Broncos, yeah.
But their run game has always been so good, and they've been always just a good, well-rounded roster, and I think they're, I don't know.
And you know what adds to their run game this year? A quarterback that can run
the ball.
And that's, like, the biggest thing about, like, this whole offensive line thing that, like, makes me feel a little better, because we don't have What was his name?
Sam Hartman?
No, who was the guy that was an absolute statue in the pocket that was the transfer from Boston College? I can't think of his name right now.
Oh, I know exactly who you're talking
about. It was like a Polish name. Look it up for me. We don't have a statue in the pocket anymore, and I wouldn't say Sam was necessarily a statue in there, but like, and Buchner kind of had some wheels as well, but.
Oh, I'm not pronouncing this.
Phil Yurkovic, thank you. He was a statue, and it was the worst thing to ever watch. Riley Leonard is going to run. We saw him do it against us last year in Duke, and it was just one of the hardest games I've ever had to watch, but thankfully.
I forgot you guys brought him in. That's a good pickup. That's a really good pickup.
And I don't mean this as like talent wise, but just the way he plays is just so similar to Josh Allen. We just have a tall guy that can move and still just launch the ball far down the field. And it's so fun to have that for Notre Dame behind the center, but it's just a nervous time with that offensive line and at A&M too.
All right. Well, no matter what happens this week, either me and Joey are feeling confident or Julian can make fun of us for a week and probably the rest of the season. One more game though, before we get into it. USC 23. Versus LSU, number 13 in the country on Sunday. We got some Sunday football. That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
First game in the last 2 years for USC without Caleb Williams. How do you guys think they're going to fare this year?
Well, just what a tough way to start off this season for USC is you finally get the move to the Big Ten, and then you go against one of the best teams in the SEC to kick it off. It's going to be a reality check. I don't know how to feel for USC personally, but if they get a victory out of this, then they're going to have a lot of confidence in a Big Ten that is not as strong as it was last season.
Yeah, looking at LSU's team, they have so many highly recruited prospects right now. We got Will Campbell, Harold Perkins, people like that. Miller Moss is their quarterback, and he played great at the end of the year in that last game, but I just don't know if he can do it. I think LSU, being in the South, being a great team like that, I think they're going to win this game, but USC will make it competitive. They haven't been good on defense since forever. And LSU's defense and offense both look great this year, so I think LSU's coming with the win.
Nonetheless, feels so good to have football back. And next week, we're going to have NFL football back to talk about. And we're going to talk some more last week of NFL preseason when we come back on the Red Zone. WZND, the pulse of Red Bird Nation, back here on the Red Zone. Ben Hootie, Julian Voss, Joey LeMaster, getting ready to talk some NFL football. We are, what did I have in the studio at the station today? 10 days away from NFL football. Actually, less than that. We're a week away from NFL football. 10 days till Bears season. To Steve Cease's demise. But nonetheless, it's been a big week in the National Football League. A lot of summer long just stuff that was just being brought up all summer finally coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we could start with the CeeDee Lamb extension. Big time news for the Cowboys as they are able to lock up their star wide receiver CeeDee Lamb for the next 4 years. The contract war is finally over with Jerry Jones and CeeDee Lamb, and CeeDee Lamb looks to be a Cowboy for the long run.
Yeah, I am one of the biggest CeeDee Lamb fans, I feel like, probably around this whole entire area. He's been such a good receiver for so long, and he's exactly what Dak Prescott's needed this whole time. My thing is why Jerry Jones took this long to give him what he wanted. This is your guy. Like, this is the guy, out of all three of the top guys, Dak, Micah, and him, this is the guy that they need to bring in the most, because without CeeDee Lamb, that whole offense has absolutely nothing.
Yeah, especially with how much they lost with the offensive line this season. It's pretty much CeeDee or bust, because CeeDee can run any route in the world. He can pretty much catch anything. And so when Dak's going to struggle, that's going to always be his guy. So that's just such a massive move for the Cowboys if they wanted to stay competitive.
And it's funny, because he missed a couple of games last year, and I'm pretty sure he still had like the most targets in the NFL yeah. by a ton. So I don't know. I think it's the right deal. I just drafted CeeDee Lamb in my fantasy league as soon as his nose broke. I was drafting him anyways because I knew this was going to get done.
Uh-huh.
But it does kind of bring up that interesting point that you brought up, and I think we could kind of switch this to Cowboys talk, even though who really wants to talk about the Cowboys? Well, we do, because they're America's team, and it gets clicks. This whole situation brings up a lot of good points, and we've seen it as Bears fans, a discourse on Twitter about Michael Parsons being traded to the Bears. There is no rumors right now. There's nothing out there that's saying it's going to happen. But at some point, while CeeDee Lamb was waiting for his extension this summer, at some point they're going to have to choose between paying their quarterback, Dak Prescott, who, once again, as much as people don't like him or seem to think he's overrated, he's still a very solid quarterback, and Michael Parsons, who is arguably top three defender in the NFL.
Yeah.
So it brings up that point. Who are they going to extend? Because they're going to have to – I think they can only extend one.
Yeah. So this isn't really – there's no speculation, as Ben said. There's no rumors. There's just a whole lot of manifestations that's trying to go on Twitter. We want to see Micah Parsons in a Bears jersey so bad. It's just – he's like the missing piece we have on defense, even though Julian was hyping up Austin Booker earlier, which is just totally deserved. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Micah Parsons can be that missing piece. It's just – if you look at Jerry Jones, how could you – how do you not pay the quarterback? Like, as awesome as Micah Parsons is and as much garbage as Dak Prescott receives on Twitter, you have to pay your quarterback.
Yeah, I agree. This is my thing with it. If he didn't want to re-sign CeeDee Lamb, he wouldn't have had an idea what he wanted to do at quarterback, too. Because if you're going to have CeeDee Lamb, you need a quarterback with him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why would you not pay the guy? He's 31 years old. That's fine for a quarterback age. That's perfectly fine. Like, a little bit past your prime, but, like, he still hasn't hit his peak at all because who knows what he could do. It's also, like, I think he's going to see if he makes the playoffs and how far and how he does in it, if he's going to pay him or Micah. Because if the defense plays better and they're the ones balling out in the playoffs, Micah might be the one getting the bag. But if not, and Dak totally just throws a game away for them, it might just be see a Dak for them.
Wasn't there a big rumor like a year or two ago that, like, I don't know if it was Justin Herbert or something, that Jerry Jones like offered like a like the house for Justin Herbert?
Really?
It was something like that. So I feel like he's confident in his quarterback and Dak Prescott because he's been there for so long, it feels like, at this point. But You got to extend your quarterback. It's just the most simple thing ever. And I guarantee you, in Cowboy world and Jerry's world, we're all manifesting this. They're not going to – they can only extend one, and they might be willing to go over the tax to extend both by a ton and just be stuck forever and have these three stars. So personally, I think if you're going to get one done, you got to get it done with Dak because you can find another top defensive player like you did in Micah Parsons. Well, it's so hard to come around a quarterback these days.
I agree with that. And also, just adding on to that, they get way more value for Micah versus Dak Prescott at this point, too. If you're trading Micah Parsons away, you're at least getting two first-round picks.
Good point.
And that's huge for their defense. It's huge for everything because that's another person and another value you get for another good player on your defense. Yes, it's not Micah Parsons. Maybe it is Micah Parsons type of level. But with that, you're still building for your future while also maybe getting another good player, too.
And let's say you pay Micah Parsons as well and you like hypothetically want to move on from Dak. You're not going to have the money to sign someone. So you got to draft a quarterback. Is Quinn Ewers staying in Texas and leaving the Cowboys and be better than Dak? Is Shedeur Sanders going to bust up that baguette and lead the Cowboys to a Super Bowl? Is Carson Beck going to be a Cowboys quarterback? No. Like, as great as Micah Parsons is, I feel like that position's easier to replace.
Yeah, 100%. And also, like you say, you mentioned those names, which I don't even think is like in the realm of possibilities.
Yeah.
But even if they were to keep Micah, trade Dak, you still have to move up in the first round because the Cowboys aren't coming anywhere near the top 10 anytime soon.
Yep.
Even no matter who the quarterback is, mm-hmm. because that defense is good enough. Maybe the rest of the offense isn't too great outside of CeeDee Lamb, but still, it just doesn't make sense. Dak Prescott, it feels like he is just primed to be a Cowboy for the rest of his career and probably win zero rings. let's go to Brandon Ayuk. This just
Finally.
Broke before we hopped on the show, which is crazy because the two guys that I just drafted in my big fantasy league was Brandon Ayuk and CeeDee Lamb.
Talk that talk.
I'm just saying. They got their money. So I'm feeling good. My fantasy team's feeling good. But Brandon Ayuk, 4-year, $120 million deal, staying in the Bay Area. We've been hearing it all offseason long. Oh, he's going to the Steelers. He's going to the Commanders. What was another team?
Yeah. Commanders, Steelers.
Browns. Apparently there was a deal in place.
Yeah.
And Amari Cooper was going to go to the Bay. Yeah. And Brandon Ayuk was like, I'm not going to Cleveland. I don't blame you. Cleveland's
horrible. And New England.
New England was another one. But no matter what, all the discourse, Brandon Ayuk is staying in the Bay Area. He will be a Niner for the next 4 years.
Yeah, to me, I'm not mad at receivers or any position at that matter for holding out. Like, you got to remember at this point, this is your family's generations trying to make money for them. And if you have one small injury at a practice or a preseason game, you're not going to get as much money or even that money at all versus if you just hold out. So these guys obviously are going to get their money at some point. It was just a matter of when. But for them, I totally understand like holding out. Ayuk did a great job with it, I feel. Just like he stayed patient. He didn't talk like any smack about his team or nothing. He just waited till he got his time, and he got the money now, so it's fine.
Yeah, I'm just so happy this deal is finally done. I don't think I've ever been more happy to see a deal finally be done. It's just every week some like fake journalist on Twitter is like, I got the update. Ayuk is a Cleveland Brown trust. And then he's just stayed in the 49ers for what felt like 4 or 5 months. So this finally getting done is huge. And this is massive for the 49ers. You know, they've been having to pay a lot of people, but Ayuk is so talented. And he's a reason people think Brock Purdy is sometimes in the top five quarterback conversations because of how skilled he is. So this is just so massive for the 49ers and so massive for the Ben Hootie fantasy team.
But that's the other thing about it too. It's like, I think people were kind of saying like, why extend Brandon Ayuk when you already have Deebo Samuel on a big deal? Well, the way the Niners offense works is Deebo Samuel is their wide receiver one, but he's not because he's their Swiss Army knife. Mm-hmm. He is playing so many different positions. Well, he's playing wide receiver and running back at the same time, but Brandon Ayuk is their guy when they need a deep ball. When they need a first down, they're going to Ayuk. He's just formed into that. He's become that. And that's why they needed to keep him around, because when you have Kittle, Ayuk, Deebo, McCaffrey, that's what makes their offense whole. That's the Shanahan experiment. He's literally like cooking in the lab 100% of the time. Every player has their own role, and that's what I like about their team. And I just think this Ayuk extension, I'm so happy it got done. It makes total sense, and it just seems like they're going to run it back. Also, I respected his holdout, too, because he wasn't holding out. He was holding in. He was still doing practice. Yeah, yeah. He was still going to practice. He wasn't showing up in street clothes.
Oh, don't get me started.
We're going to get there. And he's been there. He seems like he wanted to stick around in the Bay Area, but if it wasn't going to work, he was totally fine with finding other options.
Yeah, it seemed like... Like you said, him and Deebo are 1A, 1B. Deebo keeps the defense guessing. He's the one out there, like, you don't know what he's going to do. Ayuk, if he gets the ball, he's going to make a play.
Yeah.
Like, that's how it goes with that team. Deebo, I feel like, matters more on their whole scheme, but Ayuk is a better player for them.
Yeah, so there's too much positivity. I want to whine and complain for a second, if that's cool with you guys. So, Ben is having the dream fantasy football draft. I drafted 4 days ago. My first pick was Ja'Marr Chase, whose contract is done in 2 years, and he is already holding out of practice. And my second pick was Kyren Williams, who is currently listed as a punt returner for the Rams. I don't think I could have had a more disastrous start to my fantasy season.
So you mentioned Ja'Marr Chase. This entire NFL segment has been just about wide receivers holding out. And this offseason alone, Julian showed me this before we went on the show, wide receivers that have gotten their contract extension: Brandon Ayuk, CeeDee Lamb, Justin Jefferson, DJ Moore, Amon-Ra St. Brown, AJ Brown, Jalen Waddle, Nico Collins, Devonta Smith, Michael Pittman, Calvin Ridley, Jerry Judy. One more, there's like a clown in that group, and it's Jerry Jeudy. one more remains. It is Ja'Marr Chase. Give me your guys' thoughts on this entire situation, because it seems like it's got to get done, right?
It has to, because like, especially if you look at the drama that was going on during that draft, it's like, oh, do we take Ja'Marr Chase or we take Penei Sewell? Mm-hmm. If you're going to not take on the tackle, protect Burrow, and you're going to get Burrow's guy, you got to bring back Burrow's guy. I think it's as simple as that. Like, I know it's 2 years away, but Ja'Marr Chase is almost levels ahead of everybody. Like, he's in that top echelon of receivers. You don't let that walk away. Just pay the guy. Don't waste the time, because the AFC North is also so tough this year.
Yeah.
You can't afford to waste opportunities like this. So just pay your man.
You totally took what I wanted to say.
My
whole thing was too, like, they took Ja'Marr Chase instead of Penei Sewell because he had the connection with Joe Burrow. You got to give Joe Burrow's guy his money, or else you're going to also make Joe Burrow mad.
Yeah. So like,
and also T. Higgins, you had the whole thing with T. Higgins. If you're going to trade him, if you're not going to trade him, why would you do that if you're just not going to give Ja'Marr Chase his money in general? Without Ja'Marr Chase, they don't make the Super Bowl either. So, like, why would you not give the guy that you – that's honestly, next to Joe Burrow, the most important person in your franchise history almost right now, next to, like, obviously Chad Johnson. I don't want to say anything crazy like that because I'm bringing up Chad Johnson again.
No, I mean, you're kind of right outside of, like, A.J. Green and Carson Palmer.
This is your next top level guy, and he's still – I think he's under 25 still. So,
yeah.
So why not give him his money, and then you have that connection for over a decade?
Yeah, it makes no sense to me. They got Slim Shady at quarterback, but their owner wants to be slim in his pockets and just not throw out the money. Just pay the man. Don't overcomplicate it. It's really not that difficult of a decision.
They're going
to
get it done. We are in a much different landscape of the NFL than it was a couple years ago when it came to in terms of money. Salary caps have been extended. But I'm just looking back and thinking about like the whole Tyreek Hill situation and how the Chiefs were willing to give up the best wide receiver in the NFL and still win two more championships after that.
Mm-hmm.
So just the landscape's different, especially with what we've seen just this offseason. All those names I've mentioned managed to get done. I feel like ownership is finally realizing how important these wide receivers are, because I just feel like the role of wide receiver and having a true number one has truly just changed the way the game has been.
have that DJ Moore contract looks so much better by the day. 110, something like that is crazy.
We got to add out some Bears propaganda.
Give me a quick spiel about Bears. Let's go.
Steve, the Bears are finishing higher than the Lions this year. The bet is still on. The Bears haven't run. Hard Knocks has been incredible. The vibes are there. The DJ Moore contract was a steal. Jalen Johnson shutting down everybody, bearing down all over the place.
So we're wrapping up here on the Red Zone. Once again, thank you, Hannah Reichensberger, for joining the show. Great interview with her. This weekend, Iowa, 10:50 a.m. Tune in. Also tune into our volleyball broadcast, 6:20, Friday and Saturday. Thanks for joining
us. This has been Red Zone.
Robinson looking out, drives inside, going to find Mary Crompton for her first three of the day. And it's good!
Curry owned the league last year.
And personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
JD, I've got fun.
Check out our TikTok at 1033_WZND.
Try to blame my youth. I just wanna be amused. Neon light leads us to the end of time. Cause I can see infinity in your eyes, in your eyes. You and I got some troubles we're facing. I know we can make it, staying high. Inside a desert haze, I just want.